Napa know-how.
Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
The road of good fortune the Lakers have been riding since the end of the season has come to an abrupt halt, like it always has, with free agency.
I didn't think, obviously, just like the rest of the world, we're going to get Timofey Mozgov within the first minute of free agency. That definitely killed my buzz. Everything feels very surreal right now. I'm trying to be as neutral as possible in this moment.
Great. That sums it all up pretty well. This was the true test to our fortuitous longevity, and sadly, the buck stops always at free agency.
Preseason, we've watched some Lakers games. The Lakers games have been pretty good. There have been some ups. There's been some downs. If you're D'Angelo Russell, you missed all of your shots in one game and then made all of them in another game. But if there's one thing we've learned, it's that Nick Young is undisputedly the best player on the Lakers. Can everyone agree to that right now?
Yeah, that's
all. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
I cautiously agree.
I will actually say all those in favor say P. So ready? One, two, three. P. There you go.
So this is everyone from the Lakers Legacy Podcast. And then it's me and Fred Johnson from The Flagrant Take. I'm Chris Axman, host of Almighty Ballin' and the producer of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. And then on the other line, there are all the guys from the Lakers Legacy Podcast. So just one of you guys pick that up, run with it, you know, just...
Sure, cool. This is Jonathan Hernandez. You can follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. I'm here with Alan Riley and Tommy Alexander. Guys, if you want to share your Twitter handles, go ahead. But for the most part, we're at Lakers Legacy Pod. So
that's a great Twitter handle to follow. It's good enough for me.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, Tommy? Sweet.
Yeah, same.
Yep, there's Tommy.
Whoa, Tommy. Are you there?
Sorry, am I cutting out? What's going on?
Yeah, you're cutting out a little bit.
Okay, sorry. No. Yeah, Lakers Legacy Podcast.
Are you talking to us from on the back of a dragon? Anyways, and then Fred. Fred's the host of The Flagrant Take, which is without a doubt the second best podcast on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Fred.
Debatable, but yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah, it's debatable. you could be like third or fourth. But yeah, Fred, shout out that Twitter. Talk a little bit about Flagrant Take, you know, and we can get the show on the frickin' road.
Absolutely. Flagrant Take Podcast. I'm actually co-host, one of two, with my buddy Jim Matthews. And we basically cover the current events and hot topics that are going on in the NBA. We usually drop around Fridays. We also have the fan page on Facebook, the Flagrant Take Podcast. But feel free to hit us up on Twitter, NYJones7 for Jim and Flagrant Take for myself.
Cool.
Sweet. So beyond lit... If you guys are Lakers fan, is that true? You guys aren't just covering the Lakers. You are all Lakers fans, right?
Yeah, we're all Lakers fans.
All
yeah,
I mean, yes.
Okay, cool. So what is your sentiment right now? You know, and that's a little bit different from how are all the fans feeling? Like, what is, you know, the tenor of the Lakers fandom? You specifically, how are you feeling? And, you know, I guess, like, we'll start with Tommy, I guess. Is that good? That seems good.
Sure, Tommy, go ahead. Why don't you tell him our favorite word that we like to use on the show?
Well, we're feeling pretty lit right now, to be honest with you. I mean,
I said beyond lit.
Yeah, beyond lit. Now, pretty much what you expect, right? We're in a rebuilding situation, and we're just trying to enjoy it. I think there's rebuilding and like, oh, this team is just going to be bad for 10 years and collect draft picks. And there's rebuilding with a purpose. And I think we're all pretty excited that it seems like this isn't like a quote unquote rebuild that the Clippers did from 1985 to 2005 or whatever. It seems like there's a direction now. So I think we're pretty excited about that.
All right. Yeah, and I think on my end, if I could jump in, you know, it's funny that on our podcast, we've kind of, you know, the Sixers have hashtag trust the process. And for some reason, at least on our podcast, it became hashtag lit. That's our biggest contribution. That's our phrase, which is sad. But that's really how we feel right now. And like Tommy said, I think there's some intentionality and purpose to this. Obviously, the last few years have been hard to fully go full bore into this because Kobe's been here. We've had to see him on his way out, really. And I think once Kobe left and Kobe retired, you know, God bless his soul, we haven't been able to really go full steam ahead. But I think now we're in that moment, especially with Byron being gone and Luke joining the fold. So there you go.
I would say wouldn't our hashtag have been trust the salary cap? Because I think that's what was being preached every year as far as salary cap room. We're going to definitely get a star this year. And then every offseason would come and go, and there was no star.
And you got at least one
account, Wesley Johnson.
You got your max contract man, Timofey Mozgov. So
we did, yeah.
Yeah. And actually, so I've been defending the Mozgov contract because, like, to me it makes a ton of sense. I think that, you know, there's a ton of hate for the Evan Turner signing. And there was a ton of hate for the Timofey Mozgov signing. I think that those have been the two most contested contracts. But I think both teams were in a situation where, specifically the Lakers, they absolutely needed. I mean, we've seen how bad this Lakers defense is in the preseason, and I don't think it gets better from here. So they absolutely needed a center who could protect the rim by getting vertical, right? Because that's specifically what they needed. And they needed a guy who could be an Andrew Bogut in the Luke Walton Warrior system and set big ass picks, right? And they needed a veteran who is ultimately replaceable in the end when they do find their center of the future, because that's the big missing piece, right? Mm. And they need a guy who's high character, and specifically a high character guy who can remain high character when he's on a losing team. Because there's this catch-22 where if you're high character, you probably don't want to sign on a really crappy team for a ton of money. But I think Mozgov is that super rare guy who will actually put in effort, who will actually put in work, and do his role. So Mozgov, to me, literally was the only guy on the market who fit all these criteria. And I think that if there was a possibility of him going somewhere else, you needed to pretty much pay him what you ended up paying him.
I think at the end of the day, the optics of it all looked pretty bad in the order that they did it in, because he was 12:01 a.m. call, you know, and I think that's what most of us had a concern over. And then outside of that, it was just more the years. You know, the money wouldn't have made a difference. In my opinion, I would have just signed him to like 2 years, $40 million, and then have been done with it. Because again, you're signing a guy who, like, in a vacuum, Timofey Mozgov is everything you described him to be. Like a really good defender, really great pick and roll player, actually super athletic and catch the ball really really well. And D'Angelo Russell now has a pick and roll partner, as opposed to last year when he just had Roy Hibbert, who couldn't even catch the ball or even finish. So all those things in a vacuum are great. I think it was more the long term, at least in my opinion, that had me concerned. One, you're like picking up a guy who just had a botched knee surgery and couldn't even play 20 minutes last year, and then you're giving him 4 years. You know, the money doesn't matter, but it's 4 years fully guaranteed. And seeing how well Zubats has come on, you know, it's early, but he might not come on till maybe year three, year four. But by that time, you'll still have Timofey Mozgov making $17 million, and presumably he'd be doing that from the bench, you know. So I mean, that's where my concerns lie. We've actually got Timofey Mozgov on the line, so we can actually ask him, isn't that right, Timofey?
Hello, guys. I am very happy to be here, and I appreciate your kind words. I work hard. I do my best.
There you go. Thank you, Timofey.
You are welcome.
Who was it? Was it Timofey or was it Zubac? Was like, I put the ball in the basket.
that was Zubac, right? Zubac.
I like Zubac.
Yes, I put the ball in the basket and I block all of the shots.
There you go.
That's all I need to hear. Well, no, my question for you guys, in reference to big men who were on the market, I mean, I remember there was Hassan Whiteside, there was Festus Ezeli, who came off of a bad NBA Finals, but he had the familiarity with Luke Walton in his system. I won't even bring up Bismack Biyombo, because I think when you were looking for a starter, it was pretty evident that, you know, he can't necessarily handle that load.
Obviously, dude, Bismack's great. No, you don't even know.
Yeah, Hassan Whiteside obviously had no intentions of leaving Miami, and sure, I know that there were injury concerns for Festus Ezeli and being able to stay healthy, but I would say those same concerns still exist with Timofey, no?
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I said. You know, he had that botched knee surgery, and he wasn't even able to play in the playoffs last year, so I mean, that was my biggest concern. And the reason why I like Bismack Biyombo was, one, he can also defend pick and roll. He's a great pick and roll defender. You know, Timofey Mozgov, when he reaches that past 10 feet, he's like stuck on an island because he's kind of lead footed, and you know, guys like Damian Lillard can easily like pass him. At least Bismack Biyombo provides us with some extra perimeter defense outside of just the rim protection. So that's why I was wondering, well, how come we're not getting Bismack? But at the end of the day, I'm actually okay with it. It's just the years was the biggest issue for me. I don't know if Tommy wants to chime in on what his thoughts of Mozgov are.
Yeah, I think I pretty much agree with everything that's been said so far. The big thing is we needed a veteran, we needed size, we needed rim protection. As much as I liked Bismack and what he did in the postseason last year, I like the way that he moves laterally on the perimeter, which like kind of fits in with what we're trying to do now, or I guess what every team in the NBA is trying to do now. But we needed a big body down there, and Timofey was the guy. Hassan Whiteside was not going to sign with a team that won 17 games. Apparently Ezeli's injury was so scary, whatever it was, that nobody wanted to sign him, which is why he ended up taking way below what everybody projected for him to go to Portland, you know. And I think he signed a 2-year deal, and the second year isn't even guaranteed. So, or it's like a team option. So it's one of those things where when it happened, I was as shocked as anyone else. Again, the years, like, could it have been 3 years? I don't know. Would he have accepted 3 years right at the deadline, or like right when the clock started? When you're in a situation where you've struck out in free agency as many years in a row as we have, you sort of just have to make your move and live with the consequences. Apparently, you know, after we signed Mozgov, there were reports, and of course, we'll never know if this was true, but several other teams were thinking about contacting him. Maybe they wouldn't have paid him as much as we did, or maybe they wouldn't have paid him as many years as we did. But when you're a team that wins 17 games, it doesn't really matter if you're the Lakers. You sort of have to overpay to get those types of guys.
Right.
Well, yeah. And I mean, you talk about a guy like Bismack Biyombo and even Festus Ezeli. I think it would have been a bad sign if either of those guys had taken tons of money and a long contract from the Lakers, because like I said, I think that there's this catch 22 that people don't realize. If you're choosing willingly to go to a team that is in full rebuild and you're a veteran, that's a bad sign, because it means you don't really want to compete, right? So it's a bad sign. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're, you know, gonna just eat hamburgers and like Raymond Felton all day necessarily, but I just don't think that, I mean, Bismack Biyombo in particular, right? I mean, he's had weight problems in his career. Now, he looks like chiseled marble in the playoffs this year, but he also just got a huge contract from the Magic. I mean, we'll see. I really like Bismack. I like his upside, and I think I'm really going to like him next time his contract is up, because he strikes me as the type of guy who's going to be a contract player, right? So that's my concern. I don't think that there was a guy who you could sign who would still, you know, try. Like Mozgov, there was that transition defensive block he had really recently where he ran down the court and came from behind and swatted, I'm not sure what team it was against, but he was hustling his ass off in the preseason. How many 30-year-old, 400-pound Russians can you think of that would do that? Because Nikola Pekovic wouldn't do that.
Right. No, I mean,
to say myself until you said Russian, and then I was like, oh, well, I guess not me.
No, I mean, everything you're saying is correct, and I agree with you. I think at the end of the day, if the Timofey Mozgov signing had happened last, this would have made I mean, nobody would have had an uproar, really. But, you know, it's, I think it's just the optics, like him being signed first. And then we found out, oh, Jordan Clarkson got a steal of a deal. And then Luau Deng signed. And they pretty much lined up Luau Deng's contract with Timofey Mozgov's contract. And I think, for me, I was totally fine with that strategy where it's like, okay, for 3 or 4 years, the Lakers have pretty much said, we're just going to rebuild with the young guys and continue to develop them. And maybe in year 3 or 4, when Timofey Mozgov's contract and Luau Deng's contract expires, that's when we go out into real free agency once again. And they're kind of saying it's going to be a 3 or 4 year process here. And I was totally fine with that once I realized that was the strategy. Or initially, I was just like, Mozgov, what the heck are we just going to do with Mozgov? He's not going to move the dial. But yeah, like you said, he is a really solid player if he's healthy. And I think for me, I just don't think there's a reality in year 4 where I'm like, Timofey Mozgov super effective. I just see him coming off the bench by that time. But I think also at that time, it really won't matter. So,
yeah, and let's move on to a more lit topic. I think, you know, probably it would have been, this podcast would have been, you know, exponentially more lit if we had just opened with the idea, okay, D'Angelo Russell.
Yes.
Go. Run with it. Okay. So I want from you guys, D'Angelo Russell player comparisons, because I've heard some interesting ones and I'm looking to add to my portfolio of D'Angelo Russell player comparisons.
Sure. Alan, do you want to go?
Yeah, he's such a unique player. It's hard to pinpoint one other guy, but I would say I see some James Harden in him, and it isn't simply because he's a lefty, but they both have kind of an old man game to them. They're great in the post. D'Angelo surprisingly has some advanced footwork while he works in the post, and you would think he would just want to stay on the perimeter and come off screens all day and shoot jumpers, but he has the height advantage as a 6'5" point guard. At the same time, the Mike Conley comparison comes out pretty frequently due to his length. I could see that in some ways as far as defensive potential. Conley's a great defender, and D'Angelo has shown some flashes of that, so we'll have to see if that can pan out in the next couple years. As far as other players, again, it's pretty tough to compare him to some others. As far as his passing skills, I really can't think of another guy that to compare him to at this point, just because our offense last year was so stagnant, we couldn't really see him do anything. Now this year, it's a very small sample size. He has shown some great vision, but I still think he has so much room to grow. It might be a little bit premature to pinpoint a particular player with elite passing skills. So yeah, for now, I'm going to go with Harden because he does look to score the ball first and foremost. And then Conley, I could see a little bit as far as some of his measurables on the defensive end.
Cool. I guess for me, you know, I think Harden is going to be a popular answer, and I agree with Harden. I also like a little bit of Manu Ginobili in his game because he's very crafty and not super athletic. I know Manu Ginobili has had some athletic plays, sneaky athletic plays in his history, and I think D'Angelo will show that here and there with like a random poster or two, but for the most part, he uses his skill and craftiness to get buckets. And I think Harden and Manu Ginobili are pretty good post-up players because of their size at the two as well, so I like those comps for him. And obviously, I think we're seeing more and more with his quick release and how hot he gets from three-point land. I think the Curry comparison is pretty apt, or if you want to go Damian Lillard, when he gets it going and he gets it hot, like it really comes off his fingertips and wrists like on fire. So that's why I think those comparisons come into play. You know, initially when he first came into the league, people were saying like, oh, if nothing shakes right and this guy sucks, maybe his worst case scenario is Brandon Jennings. But I can't even see that at this point because, one, Brandon Jennings is barely 6 feet. And D'Angelo Russell is, what, 6'4", and he's been able to really post people up and kill people in the mid-range and pick and roll, putting them in jail and just hitting these mid-range jump shots and also getting on fire from three. So, yeah, that's who I would compare him to. Harden, Manu Ginobili, and then from three, a little bit of Curry. With regards to his passing, you know, he's a wild card right now. He likes to take very risky passes and very flashy-looking passes. The next evolution of D'Angelo's game will be, you know, can he be a good floor general for 48 minutes the entire game and not always go for the home run pass? And can he make better decisions, you know? And so, yeah, that's pretty much it for me. Tommy?
Yeah, I think Harden is the obvious one just because similar body types. And I mean, you could argue similar position because although D'Angelo's a point guard, and I think he's more of a natural point guard than Harden, they are both scoring guards. The thing I heard recently, I can't remember who said this, but I kind of liked it. It's like not obvious, and that there's there are more ways they're dissimilar than they're similar, but I think Chris Paul is kind of an interesting one.
Yeah,
in the sense that like there aren't really that many guys who are deadly from the mid-range anymore, and Chris Paul is one of those guys left. Chris Paul's really good at utilizing screens, getting into space in the mid-range, in the mid-range area of the court, and converting. And I think D'Angelo is, I mean, he's already shown signs that he could potentially be in the next few years, like one of the, especially as Chris Paul starts to age out, like one of the best, if not the best, mid-range scorer in the entire league. So I like that. But his skill set, yeah, it's so unique. Like this guy is 6'5". He's got a 6'10 wingspan. He's got a lightning quick release. He puts up threes like with an effortless stroke. You know what I mean? And it's James Harden, you know, they look the same. They're both lefties, but they, but D'Angelo, I think is even a better shooter than Harden. So it's going to be really crazy to see how his career progresses, in my opinion.
Well, I hear a rebuttal here. I'll go real quick and then we'll definitely get this rebuttal in here. But, you know, not only am I a Laker fanatic, but I'm also a Cincy native. So I'm absolutely going to dig back in the crates as everybody's doing their modern comparisons. So for all the millennials, I'm going to say he's a taller version of Nick Van Axel in regards to his dramatics. The ice water in my veins, the flair for the dramatics, that time showmanship that he puts on the court, and the fact that he was also once a Laker point guard and a former All-Star as a Laker as well back in the mid-90s. I'm going to go with the Nick Van Axel comparison. I mean, a lot of people have pretty much forgotten him in history, but he was also a guy that, you know, had quite the impressive college resume leading his team to a championship. So I'm going to go with Nick Van Axel until I see more and see it also on the postseason stage before I start giving him the same acclaim as other perennial All-Pros in the league.
Does he shoot his free throws from the three-point line like Nick Van Axel?
Not yet, but just give it time.
Not yet. Okay, so how about this, guys? And this fits into a larger concept, which I was trying to sell to the Locked On Lakers guys. My comparison, okay, what I would like to see from him, and this is, you know, an end result rather than, it's a work in progress, right? I would like him to be Utah Jazz era Deron Williams.
Hmm.
Because I think that that's how they're going to run their half-court offense, is like the Jazz in 2006 or so.
Hmm. I would be down with that, to be honest with you. I think his playmaking and floor general chip, or that's not a word, but his floor general, you know what I'm saying? Like it's not to Deron Williams level, because Deron Williams came in and like averaging 8 assists and like really being able to run the show really well. But if he could get to that level...
He wasn't in Byron Scott's offense, though.
That's true. But I mean, even in Ohio State, Russell had that problem of, you know, taking too many risky passes. He is a great passer. He has great vision, but it sometimes comes in spurts. Whereas Deron Williams, to me, is more of a complete playmaker. But if he can get to that level, yes, I would love that. And I think with Luke Walton, he can. So just don't get injured, you know?
I'm just going to go straight to the reason why the, you know, Sloan era Utah Jazz is how I see them operating in half court. And this is specifically in half court because they were a slow paced team and they didn't get out on the break, which is, I think, what Luke Walton wants to do. The thing is, I think that the full court offense is going to answer itself, and it's not going to be something that Lakers fans are going to have to worry about, because I think that, you know, I mean, for all the concerns I have about Julius Randle, his full court offense looks pretty dope a lot of the times. I think that Brandon Ingram is going to like suit well to that. So all of my questions are, if the defense gets back, can you create in the half court? And that's where I see things coming to fruition. And that brings me to Brandon Ingram as Andre Kirilenko. Guys, I think he's a part of their core, and I think he's going to be a star, but not like a scoring star. I think he'll be like Andre Kirilenko. You know, I want him to average 2 blocks, you know, 2 steals, you know, like 4 assists, 10 rebounds, and like 15 points. And I think that would be amazing for the Lakers. So, yeah, I mean, are you guys on the Kevin Durant train, or would you be okay with seeing him end up being, you know, a star as a role player, sort of?
Yeah, I think he, I never really bought the Kevin Durant thing. That's like sort of a lazy comparison to me because I have similar body types. But I think right now it's hard to see because he's so weak. He gets knocked around the paint. Like, you know, you touch that guy and he bounces like 20 feet off of you. But one player that I always liked as a comparison for him was Kawhi Leonard, in that I think that everything he does offensively is very methodical. He doesn't really take many risks, or he doesn't have a whole lot of flash to his game. He's shown like potential to be able to operate out of the mid post. He's got a decent shot, which, I mean, Kawhi didn't develop until he got into the NBA. But I think that, you know, he makes the simple play. I think he's going to be a guy who takes high percentage shots. I don't think he's going to be Kevin Durant, who's going to go out and score 30 a game for you and completely every single night in and night out, completely dominate his matchup. But I think he's going to also, I think he's going to be more than just a really, really good role player. I think he's going to be a star, you know, all-star type player. I just don't think it's going to be quite Kevin Durant.
Alan, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think on the defensive end, if he were to be similar to Andrei Kirilenko, any of us would take that. We've already seen in the preseason his ability to block shots in a Kawhi Leonard type fashion, where he's not swatting at the ball, he isn't closing out on guys by jumping as high as he possibly can. He has great fundamentals. So in terms of being a shot blocker and his man defense, if he were to resemble Kirilenko, I would be happy with that. Where my opinion would differ is offensively, I do think he will make more of an impact than Kirilenko did back in those days. And, you know, Kirilenko was in a system where Boozer and Deron Williams were the go-to guys. Maybe on a different team, he would have had a more significant offensive impact. On the Lakers, I definitely foresee Ingram being the first or second option, depending on who's feeling it between him and D'Angelo. So I think he'll be a perennial all-star at some point. So yeah, that's kind of where I stand with that.
I think for me, I think even as it is right now, I think by year two, Brandon Ingram will kind of look like, and Luke Walton's made this comparison, he'll probably already look like what Trevor Ariza took 3 or 4 years to look like, you know what I mean? Because Trevor Ariza had to develop his three-point shot. His defense was always pretty solid. He became an adequate defender. Right now, Brandon Ingram's still trying to feel out what he can do. But if you remember in Duke, it took him half the season to eventually get going as well, but he still averaged 17 points. And so at the very, very worst, I think he's going to be a better Trevor Ariza who can actually playmake for other people and also get his own shot, which I guess isn't Trevor Ariza. But you know, not to say he's going to be this guy, but the same concerns were made for Giannis Antetokounmpo. You know, I don't know what Brandon Ingram is going to develop into. I just know he already has the jump shot. He already has a three-point shot, and he's got fundamentals down that guys his age don't already have. It's up to him really to round out the rest of his game and gain that confidence and kind of readjust to the speed of the NBA and the bodies, the strength and whatnot. But we've seen Giannis Antetokounmpo in 1.5-2 years gain the muscle, gain the confidence, gain the keys to be able to play make, and who knows what'll happen if those same things shake out for Brandon Ingram. But I think his worst case scenario is, you know, if it's Andrei Kirilenko, you know, that's fine. I just think he has so much more offensive polish than a guy like that, or even a guy like Trevor Ariza. So that's kind of where I stand.
Well, I'd love to see the second half of the season. I mean, we saw last year D'Angelo's numbers in the second half of the season were, you know, phenomenal, and they absolutely skyrocketed from the first half. And a lot of that was just finally Byron Scott throwing his hands up saying, okay, you just do what you need to do. But in regards to him, you know, building off of the conversation of his fundamentals, I think defensively in the second half, once he can start to actually just play the game and not think every step while he's out there on the court, I think you're going to see him being able to jump into passing lanes and, you know, change shots as people may try to drive or in the fast break when he can chase people down. But I would love to see after a full offseason, another offseason, if he can develop some muscle and see if he and D'Angelo can kind of get a pick and pop game going as they could
you know, like a 1-3 type screen and roll here or there. And I would love to see how they can develop that chemistry, because what I don't want to see is D'Angelo over dribbling and then Brandon Ingram gets relegated to the corner. And now you're just trying to say, all right, will you be this catch and shoot player, kind of like AK-47 was on those Jazz teams. While he doesn't need to be Durant and go for 30 every game, he absolutely could be a guy that if you stagger his minutes with D'Angelo Russell, he can eventually give you 22 to 25 a game, probably starting in year two.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I mean, the problem inherent there, right, is that, and you were sort of on to what I was talking about when you were talking about him interrupting passing lanes and just sort of playing free safety on defense and, you know, making hay from those turnovers that he creates and, you know, getting to the other end and finishing like Andre Kirilenko did. I mean, my problem is, if you're saying his offensive game is like Kawhi Leonard's, right? That's not, I mean, the Spurs offense was really like methodical, and I don't see how the Lakers with their players and the players that, you know, once they develop, they project to be, could play like that, honestly. I think, right, if you have a player whose number one comparison, it sounds like, is probably James Harden, I think the ball should almost always be in D'Angelo's hands. I think that he's going to be the most effective at pretty much initiating anything, and that Brandon Ingram is, honestly, if Kawhi Leonard wasn't such a freak of nature as far as, you know, some of the shots he hits and all that, those would be low efficiency shots for the vast majority of players in the league. And expecting that out of Ingram is, you know, I want to be realistic about what these players can ultimately be, and I just don't see the offensive fluidity from Brandon Ingram for him to be able to truly create offense. That's my concern.
Well, I think what you'll see a lot of is, you know, like I said, that's why I made it a point to say staggering the minutes between he and D'Angelo and making sure he gets that opportunity when he's running with that second unit, which obviously he'll do a lot of this year with him not being a starter. But ultimately, if he can be that guy that ends the first quarter or starts the second quarter and D'Angelo's probably on the bench, that'll allow him to kind of get into his flow of the game. And then obviously, you know, when we're talking fourth quarter, when both of those guys are on the court, you would like to think that they would develop that chemistry years 2, 3, and 4 once this team actually is trying to make moves into the postseason, where they can actually play off of each other and, you know, nobody feels like they're being locked out of the offense.
Yeah, and I think another underrated part of Brandon Ingram's game that we're not giving him credit for, and we're not going to see for a while because he's still feeling himself out and what to do, is he was a really good playmaker. He's really smart. And in this system, he's always going to do the right thing. He's never going to be a negative on the court out there, whether it's offensive or defensively. So I think as he goes along, you'll be able to see him really be able to playmake for other people and at the very least help the system flow and hum along. So
it sounds like what you guys envision potentially for him on offense, I have Randall penciled in to play, honestly, most of those roles, because I think Randall's, you know, probably going to end up maximizing his offensive potential beyond his jump shot. But I can think of another guy who's like 6'8" and never really developed a super consistent jump shot, who just won a championship by himself and has a similar athletic build. I mean, really, you know, there's recent comments with Draymond Green saying, this kid could be better than I am. Julius Randle has the physical profile of someone who could just be a wrecking ball on offense. And to me, ultimately, if this Lakers team works out, in large part, it'll be because Julius Randle just finishes at the basket like, you know, like a wrecking ball, right? And I can't see, it's really hard for me to believe that a guy with Brandon Ingram's game as anything more than a spot-up shooter could be able to create offense as efficient as Julius Randle, you know, catching and driving to the basket and just obliterating whoever happens to be there.
Oh, I've rarely heard efficient and Julius Randle used in the same sentence.
Okay,
but,
or finishing in the paint.
Yes. And I'll tell you right now how Brandon Ingram efficiently will be more efficient than Julius Randle. He has a very polished post game right now, with the fact that he can't actually back people down, because he can just turn around and shoot that jump shot. And once he gets strength and girth down there and he's able to back people down, it's over. So that's one way. Julius Randle doesn't have a post game right now. Brandon Ingram already does. And he can shoot threes, so.
Well, I'm not talking about a post game. So, what do you guys think about Julius Randle then? Long term starter.
I think Jonathan has very particular opinions about Julius Randle. I think I'm much more optimistic about Randle than I think a lot of people are. And that might be surprising because apparently you think Randall's going to be really great. And I tend to believe
I think that he has the highest upside on the team, but I think he's also the most likely to be out of the league in 5 years.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, I don't know if he's going to be out of the league in 5 years. I tend to agree that he has very high upside. I think he was put in an unfortunate situation, in my opinion, because when he was drafted, he was pretty widely regarded as the quote unquote safe pick, or like, you know, the sort of like the Jabari Parker type of like, oh, this guy's developed. Oh, he's like an immediate impact, like immediate contributor. Like when the Lakers picked him, all I heard about was, oh, Lakers picked this guy because, you know, they need somebody who is going to compete right away because they have Kobe Bryant still. And I think he was way, way, way more raw than people expected. And so last year we saw that, obviously. You have a 6'8". Yeah, he's extremely athletic, extremely strong, but he shot 42% from the field as a power forward, which is like not going to cut it. And although his jump shot looks a little bit better this year, it's, you know, there's a lot to be desired. Okay, you can make the argument he doesn't necessarily need that, but then he's going to have to shore up a lot of other facets of his game. You know, there's a guy who never developed a consistent jump shot, who's 6'8", very strong, won the championship, but that guy does everything else. And Randall, so far, his bread and butter is his offense, and it's not all there. LeBron is one of the best defenders in the NBA, in my opinion. He's one of the best playmakers in the NBA. And I think Randall has potential to be a really, really good playmaker and possibly an elite playmaker for his position. But it's so far away from what we've seen right now that it's, I don't know, it's hard to speculate. And then you have this guy behind him, Larry Nance Jr., who's just so solid. And yeah, he's never going to be a superstar, but it just makes Randall look so bad when you have this guy who comes in and plays defense and can space the floor and can make passes in the paint. And then you have Randall, who's like a chicken with his head cut off a lot of the time.
Chris, to be clear, were you talking about LeBron James or Draymond Green?
I was talking about LeBron.
Okay, gotcha.
I was talking about physical profiles, too, by the way. Because,
oh, sure.
To me, that's not that far off of a comparison. I think part of the reason he gets that Draymond Green comparison, and LeBron pretty much did this before Draymond Green, is because of that rebound and then push the break. I mean, I think Charles Barkley is probably the most famous for being able to do that. But Julius Randle is probably best on offense off of, you know, getting a rebound and running the break. Look, I think that it may very well be the case that the Lakers' championship aspirations are sort of, you know, made or broken on Julius Randle being really good or them stumbling into a really good replacement for him. Because I think that Julius Randle, in his ultimate form, right, is pretty much exactly what you want as a wingman in this type of offense with D'Angelo Russell, right?
I think we still need that interior toughness. I mean, I recently heard John Ireland on the Locked On podcast, and he said that his ceiling was Charles Barkley, referencing Julius Randle, but his floor was Anthony Mason. And honestly, I was fine with Anthony Mason, you know, him being a guy who came off the bench and was that interior toughness and was a guy in that rotation that you could use. And, you know, I think Julius Randle will eventually have a more, you know, refined offensive game than Mace. But in regards to being a guy that could give you, you know, anywhere from 12-8 off the bench or as a starter, could be a constant threat to be a double-double person for you, I don't see an issue with that. I think you're going to need that interior toughness. And also, I need to see that Larry Nance Jr. can survive an 82-game season playing big minutes. And I saw the wrist injury that he had, and I still have some, you know, some doubts in regards to his ability to take the pounding in the game.
Yeah.
I think the concern with Randall, and Tommy pointed to it, is the jump shot and inability to space the floor right now. That's not to say he won't eventually be able to just hit an open jump shot, but right now it's causing. We had at Laker Film Room Pete Zayas on yesterday, and he was just pretty much saying that having Julius and Timofey Mozgov on the floor right now is causing a lot of problems because neither of those guys can really space the floor, and defenses know that. And for Julius Randle, I think the problem that he's facing is he's at a position that's rapidly changing in the NBA, where now it's all about stretch fours and guys who can hit threes and do all of that stuff and also play defense. And can Julius Randle eventually round out his jump shot, you know, because you're right. Transition, he's amazing. He looks like LeBron James. He looks like Lamar Odom. That's his best asset. The problem is more than half the game is not going to be played in transition, you know? Absolutely. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, one thing, Julius Randle, when he was in high school, definitely had a above average outside jump shot. He had, I mean, he was also an off the dribble player. It's weird.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, in college, he was ultimately misutilized, which that happens a lot from Kentucky, big man being really misutilized. So, sure. I mean, he went into Kentucky with a different play style and skill set than he came out of it with, a lot like Scalabissier, I think, honestly. I think he was a, you know, round peg forced into a square hole. And, I mean, man, guys, I am high on his upside, but I am increasingly probably, I have tipped over towards the, I'm mostly unlikely about him ultimately getting it together, because I haven't ever seen him have a good defensive possession, honestly. Not a single time. I've never said, like, wow, that was a really well-played defensive possession, and I don't get it. I don't understand. I don't know why he can't get that together, and I think his floor is David Lee right now. Napa
know-how. A Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
33-year-old David Lee.
He's also getting ready to embark upon his second year of actual gameplay. I know this will be his third season with the organization, but I think there still has to be an element of development for him as well, being in a new system and also understanding that, you know, what was it, 4 years ago he was still in high school, or 5 years ago he was still in high school. So, you know, I think there's still an element there where he has to figure out just who he is as a basketball player and how it's going to fit with the rest of the guys on the court. Make no mistake, I think he is the biggest project of their young core.
And you know, here's where I defend Julius Randle, because I think he's actually a pretty good man-to-man defender. It's just he's a terrible defensive IQ player in terms of playing team defense. He'll fall asleep all of a sudden. He'll lack energy and not run back. But when he's engaged, which is few and far between, he can actually laterally move very well, because he is LeBron-esque in size, Draymond Green-esque in size, and he's very fit, very chiseled, et cetera, et cetera. So the times we have seen him, you know, quote unquote, man up and actually engage his defender, if it's just a one-on-one situation, he's actually been pretty good. However, when the screen comes, or when someone backdoor cuts, or someone races out to the three-point line, that's when you see him kind of fall asleep. And it's really just the defensive awareness that has to improve. And I think at the very least, he has the proper foundation with Luke Walton's coaching staff to hopefully help him achieve that and provide some structure on defense where, the guys learn how to communicate better and whatnot. So I don't know if any of my guys want to add in anything else with regards to Julius and defense.
Yeah, I think pointing toward his IQ and his discipline is probably his biggest issue right now. Again, if you just watch him on the defensive end, when it comes to the team concepts, he does get lost. He's ball watching very frequently, and that could go back to his past. Maybe he was I haven't seen a whole lot of high school footage of him, but maybe he was used to dominating the paint, you know, on the defensive end. And in the NBA, that's just not going to be his role. I take a lot into account when it comes to body language. And I'll notice when he makes a mistake, he hangs his head, he doesn't hustle back. And at that point, there's no way you can catch up in the NBA. So, Jonathan, like you said, I think this coaching staff can definitely, you know, speak to him and shed some light on how he needs to improve. And I believe their communication is going to be very effective, and it will help take him to that level. Last year, you know, he got benched after however many games at the beginning of the year, and it's probably because of these reasons. And it was interesting because Byron Scott said, oh, we don't like his effort, so we're going to bring him off the bench, yet he was getting double-doubles. And it's like, okay, there's a difference between activity on the glass, things like that, and effort in terms of the mental aspect of the game. So I think that's where he needs to improve the most. And if he does, then sure, the potential is extremely high.
So would you trade Jordan Clarkson for Nerlens Noel? Just straight up. I don't think the contracts work, but maybe they do. I'm not quite sure. But would you trade Clarkson for Nerlens Noel straight up? And if you wouldn't, what is it like being so wrong?
You know, that was a very... that was a popular topic leading up until, you know, this past summer. And in every scenario, I would usually always say yes. I would love Nerlens Noel. I love his hustle. He is the prototypical, you know, new age Tyson Chandler for today's NBA. He can't hit a jump shot, but that's fine. He can defend pick and roll. He can defend the paint. Super athletic, perfect pick and roll alley-oop partner. So if you had asked me that, you know, before the summer, I would have said 100% always yes. But looking at the context of everything now, I think I'm actually leaning no. So you can call me wrong all you want, but I'm actually leaning towards no, just because at this point, given Jordan Clarkson's cheap ass contract and the fact that he has improved on defense, which was his number one flaw and Achilles heel, he's making $12 million. He's going to make $12 million for the next 4 years. To trade him for Nerlens Noel and the rights to max out Nerlens Noel as soon as this summer for $23 million when we already have Mozgov and an emerging mini Marc Gasol and Zubats. Zubats is really the main reason why I'm saying no at this point. And look, you know, Marc Gasol is no, I don't know what Nerlens Noel's like ultra hyped comparison would be, but I'm fine with seeing how Zubats eventually develops. Zubats will never be as athletic and mobile as Nerlens Noel, but he could be just as skilled and solid on defense as a guy like Marc Gasol or even, you know, Timofey Mozgov. So that's why I would say, that's why I would lean no. But if you had asked me this before all the contracts were signed and before we learned Jordan Clarkson could actually play defense, I would have said 100% yes. So
you're high.
Sure.
What about the rest of you guys?
Oh, well, I'll step up to the punishment rack. I absolutely would not make that trade. I mean, especially hearing Luke Walton saying that, you know, he sees Jordan Clarkson's role being similar to Lamar Odom's when they won championships. And Luke Walton being a bench guy is going to have value for the bench. And knowing that a lot of great teams need that guy off the bench who can be that spark plug, who can be that playmaker, and also with his improved defense, he's a guy who's absolutely could be a catalyst for this team. So I'm going to say no. I think he's smart to hold on to Clarkson.
Tommy, Alan?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't do the trade either. My reasoning is mostly the contract, but I also think Jordan Clarkson, at some point it's like, are you going to take a positional need? And I get that Nerlens Noel does all this stuff and he can run the floor and, you know, he's probably going to be an elite defender ultimately at his position. But Jordan Clarkson, at some point you just have to take skill over what do I think I need? Like we have the stopgap filler center for the next few years in Mozgov. We have Zubats who's hopefully developing. We don't know what else is going to come in the, you know, in the next 3 years, but I guess it's sort of like what Jonathan said. I wouldn't trade Clarkson or really many people on the team for except maybe Randall for the right to max Noel this or next summer, because we just don't know. Is Noel going to become like a passable player offensively, even if he can set screens and catch lobs and plays good defense? Like, does he have the basketball? Like, God knows what Philadelphia's been doing, or like what they've been doing is like an offensive scheme for the last few years, because I haven't really watched them. And obviously, they've been so bad, so I'm not really sure what they're doing. But does he have the basketball IQ to be able to play in the type of offense that we want to run? I don't know. Maybe he does, but I'm not willing to spend that much on a guy who's, in my opinion, that unproven. We already have Clarkson locked in at a pretty bargain contract, even if he does come off the bench for the next 4 years. And this guy's he's like a explosive scorer. So whether he's starting or coming off the bench, I think that, I don't know. The reason I feel it's hard for me to make this argument is because I think, like Jonathan, 2 years ago or a year ago, if you asked me this question, it would be like a no-brainer. But since he improved his defense so much, or Clarkson has, and at least what he's shown in the preseason, I think I definitely wouldn't make the trade at this point.
And, you know, to Tommy's point, it's all contextual based. Like, Luke Walton's system requires the big man to be able to pass the ball. And like Tommy said, I mean, this is not to say Nerlens Noel couldn't eventually turn into like a hyped up fusion of Tyson Chandler and Andrew Bogut, but right now he hasn't shown the ability to be offensively skilled and make the right reads and passes. But you know, yeah, Alan.
Yeah, I would echo all the same. So I don't want to be redundant. I think Clarkson has improved both sides of his game so much this offseason. Time will tell over the course of the year if he can keep it up. But I like his upside at this point, and I do like the punch that he could bring off the bench eventually, if that's what it comes down to. He kind of is instant offense, instant energy. And if he hadn't made such significant strides defensively from a fundamentals point of view, then I would be a little bit more skeptical. And that's why I would keep him as well. And to echo the point about the contract, I just think that you want to hold on to him.
Chris, okay. Do you need to go to Starbucks with Sam Hinkie now?
Okay, well, I think I could convince you of the folly of your ways. I think you are being perhaps blinded by the purple and gold, but, you know, I Jordan Clarkson looks good. He's a solid player. Nerlens Noel is going to be a perennial defensive player of the year candidate, but, you know, there's a scoring punch off the bench. So I guess just sort of as we wind this podcast down, I wanted to mostly talk about this young core and also about Mozgov's contract. And we've done most of that. Who have we not really talked about out of these young guys? Maybe some sneaky guys who are crawling around the perimeter who you guys really feel good about who I haven't brought up. I feel like there's one European guy who might be brought up at some point in this list of guys who might be part of this long-term core, guys who have, you know, a lot of upside, who Lakers fans are excited about. Try to, you know, each of you, like, think of a different guy who, you know, has shown some flashes.
A different guy?
Yeah.
We're going to name the entire... I mean, it's for me, it's Zubats. I mean, I mentioned him, and he's the reason why I'm okay to pass on a guy like Nerlens Noel at this point, because he's already progressed farther than we had anticipated in terms of... He's so skilled offensively. I didn't know how skilled he was in the post. I didn't know how solid he was being able to shuffle his feet, because at first I thought he was a plodding big man, but actually he just looks that way because he's so big. But he can actually move his feet very well, and then he can block shots because of his length. And it's not like an athletic, you know, super block like a guy like Tyson Chandler would make, but it's very effective still. So I really like what I've seen very early on in Zubats. It's clear that he looks clueless out there right now. He's clearly a rookie, but he's never going to not bring the energy, I think. So, and he seems like a really hard worker who, you know, coming from overseas, he's not taking anything for granted here. I mean, he loves the Lakers. He always loves the Lakers. Alan, I mean, it's your turn, Alan.
Okay, you can all just talk about Zubats.
Yeah.
Well, I don't like to talk about myself, but I love Lakers. I have many Lakers jersey, including my own.
There you go.
I thought he had a Bynum jersey.
He does. He has a Lamar Odom. He's got Kobe. He's got Meta World Peace. He has that one. Might have been Ron Artest at the time. But yeah, he's got like four Laker jerseys. So yeah, besides Zubats, I like Tarik Black. I really think him being reunited with Luke Walton from their days in Memphis is going to make a difference. So far in the preseason, he's been very impactful while he's out there. Just like all the young guys, sure, he's going to get lost on defense from time to time. But, you know, we talked about this yesterday when we were recording. He was playing for Dwight Howard when he went down with Houston, and he was effective for them. So I think... his energy, his athleticism, and even his ability to pass the ball has improved a lot. He's always going to have a bit of a size disadvantage because he isn't even 6'10", but I think he can make up for it with his length. I'm not exactly... Do you guys know how long his wingspan is? I know it's long. I just don't know exactly.
I think it's like 7'2" or 7'3".
7'2"?
Yeah. It's remarkable. And I think he's a guy that I'm really looking forward to seeing this year. For some reason, he was in Byron Scott's doghouse last season, which made zero sense to me because he isn't like a low character guy. He's probably one of our highest character players. He has a very willing attitude. He's a team player. And that's one of the guys that I think is flying under the radar a bit for most.
Tommy? Oh, sorry.
No, you go ahead, man.
Tommy, you there?
Yeah. So I think, I don't know if this counts because I mentioned Larry Nance Jr. before, but Larry Nance Jr., I don't know if he's flying under the radar per se. I think people know about him because he's got these flashy dunks now, but we don't know what this guy's upside is. He was a 4-year college player, and I think the natural inclination is to say, okay, well, we know who he's going to be. You know, his upside's limited. And then maybe on the flip side, you have people arguing, okay, well, what about Draymond Green? He was a 4-year college player, and now he's something completely, you know, greater than any of us could have ever expected. I think the weird thing with Larry Nance Jr. is I can't remember where I read this, but at some point I read an article that suggested that he hasn't been playing basketball that like competitively for that long. I think he was 5'10" as a high school freshman or something like that. He was playing point guard for his team. And he wasn't that into it, and he almost quit because he had he has Crohn's disease. But we don't know what this guy's upside is. You know, some guys, they are what they are at 19, and that's who they are for the rest of their lives. And some guys, they just keep getting better. And I think Larry Nance had sneakily like a really, really good season in a horrible offense. The fact that he was able to put up the numbers he did with the inconsistent playing time that he had, the fact that he was able to show a semi-consistent mid-range jumper, you know, he can be potentially at least very good, if not elite defender for his position. This is a guy that is making Randall semi-expendable in the sense that, yeah, Randall has, I think, I agree that he has way more upside, but maybe you don't need to start a starting lineup of four guys like the Golden State Warriors who are just going to be all-star, all-pro type guys. You know, maybe that gives you some flexibility to move Randall and look for a center or something to mesh with the rest of this core, but I think Larry Nance Jr. could end up, I don't think any of us would be shocked if he had a better career overall than Randall, considering a lot of us are projecting, okay, Randall's either going to be near all-star level or maybe out of the league in 5 years. So I think Larry Nance is somebody to watch out for.
Well, I'm going to continue on the train of pushing Julius Randle out of the door.
Oh, geez.
A guy who very well we could wake up tomorrow and this guy could be cut. But I absolutely love Thomas Robinson and what he's brought on a complete non-guaranteed contract. I mean, a lot of people just thought he was just going to be an extra body for training camp. But, you know, when you talk about the different effort competitions that he's won in camp and in limited minutes, you can see what he can do on the glass. I absolutely love what he brings, and he's coming as advertised out of Kansas, even though as the number 5 overall pick, it's really hard to live up to that hype. Kind of what we're seeing right now with Julius Randle at the 7th overall pick. Sometimes where you're slotted and when you end up getting picked may not match up to what you may actually bring to the table. But in the event that you continue to see these guys like Larry Nance Jr. and Tarik Black make a Julius Randle expendable, I think it'll be nice to see what a Thomas Robinson could actually develop into when you have a coaching staff that will actually invest in you. And, you know, I continue to pray that every day I wake up and he's on the roster, but we'll see if that E.G. Leon contract is the reason why he may be cut here in, you know, near future.
Oh, God. Man, he looks like a future all-star too, I think, you know.
EG and Lian?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, I mean, his contract could turn into a future all-star, so yeah, by transitive property. Yes.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you guys talking Lakers. It was great, you know, talking ball with you guys. I feel like we needed to chat, get all of our feelings out there, you know,
sure.
So no one thinks that their shows are bad because they have endearingly bad impersonations of NBA players. You know, that was a friendly quip from a fellow podcaster who enjoys your podcast. So, yeah, it was great talking Lakers with you guys. We already did plugs, you know. This has been the Lakers Legacy Podcast, guys, and, you know, I'm Chris Axman from Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Check it out. We're a featured network at blogtalkradio.com/ABPN and found at almightyballer.com. So, yeah, guys, here's to a Lakers core that in the future has Nerlens Noel starting at center.
Sure. Hey, Chris. Oh my gosh. Chris, thanks for having us on, man. I think you witnessed firsthand, though, that those impressions are actually pretty on point. So there you go. Fred, it was also a pleasure speaking with you. I had fun for the first time not having to host this crap and just being able to talk and have somebody else carry the load. So, Chris, thanks for that. And yeah, Lakers Legacy Pod at Lakers Legacy Pod, and catch us on SoundCloud, iTunes, etc., etc.
All right, sweet. Oh, hey, Fred, talk about Flagrant Take, yes. Too.
Sure, Flagrant Take. Once again, we cover current events in the NBA. We are a weekly podcast, myself and my buddy Jim. Please feel free to like the fan page on Facebook, submit any comments, questions, and feel free to hit us up on Twitter that we gave you at the beginning of the show. But Legacy, guys, thank you again for having me on, and Chris as well.
Of course. Later, guys.
Thank you.
Later.